Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillich. Thanks for being with us today on this Friday. The Trump administration announced Thursday that states can now impose a work requirement on many Americans who rely on Medicaid. This would be the first time in the plan's history that people would have to work to be eligible to keep their Medicaid coverage. Now, advocates say the work requirements help push people out of poverty. Opponents say it's a way to purge Medicaid rolls and take away a safety net that many working and non-working poor rely on. Now, 10 states have requested the work requirements, which include other types of community engagement as well. Mary Harris is managing editor at WNYC's Health Desk. She's in the studio with me now. Hi, Mary.
Hey, Todd.
Well, what exactly does this new policy tell states they can do?
Well, so I'm glad you said it was community engagement. That's how the administration is framing it. They're not saying work requirement.
But that's what it is.
That's what it is. So what this does is it lets the states be more flexible. And these kinds of waivers have actually been out there for a long time. They help the Medicaid program, which was established 50 years ago, modernize and experiment and try new things. But this is really the first time we're using these waivers to actually bring the rolls down, because that's functionally what this is doing. When you look at the applications that the states have sent in, they talk about in community engagement, they talk about how work is good for people. But then when they get down to the numbers, what they're really talking about is, for instance, if you look at Kentucky, they're saying in 5 years, we think about 100,000 people will be off our rolls and we're going to save a lot of money with these programs.
So wait a second. I thought, because I was just told by the administration that this was all about lifting people out of poverty, not about getting people off of the safety net.
Well, so that's what they're saying. But I think it's really important to look back at the last time that we did this. The last time we did this was with welfare. And we said the same thing. If you have to work for your welfare money, it's going to lift you out of poverty. And what's interesting is that for the first few years, it looked a little bit like that might be happening. And then when you looked at the longer term impacts, it actually seems like that's not what happened. What happened is that just less and less people got the benefits because it became so onerous to get them. They just kind of gave up.
So who is this supposed to apply to? Who are the Medicaid beneficiaries who would actually be affected by the new policy in these states?
So what they're saying is able-bodied people will be impacted by this. And there's a real question among health policy experts of who are the able-bodied people. About 40% of people on Medicaid don't work. A lot of them are disabled. They're caretakers. Some of them are retired. So the devil is really in the details in terms of who is going to be impacted by this. And this is going to be individual states making decisions and calls about who's able-bodied, who should be working, who shouldn't be working. So we wanted to know how advocates were thinking about this, and we called up Sheila Schuster in Kentucky. And you have to think about Kentucky. It's held out there as a real example of a success story in the ACA because they expanded Medicaid, and that meant that they went from a 20% uninsured rate to an 8% uninsured rate. And she's really proud of that, but she's worried that with these new rules, that's going to just go backwards.
As a psychologist and one who has worked so closely with people with serious mental illness, with substance use disorders, and with developmental and intellectual disabilities, we worry about the burden on those folks who have Medicaid. They're not in the waiver programs, but would not be able to respond to that requirement.
What Sheila Schuster is saying there, that huge swaths of the Medicaid population really aren't people sitting around who don't want to work. They're people who either can't work or only have access to very low-paying employment in the first place.
That's right. And so they also say in this that education could be counted towards your work requirement. And I think that's a really interesting idea because education can help you come out of poverty. But this isn't funding the education. The states would have to fund that themselves. So it creates this tension, right, where we want to lift people out of poverty. We know that education does it. But where's the money going to come from for that? Because we're not going to be able to use Medicaid money to fund that.
Mary, you mentioned the history that we already have with work requirements for welfare programs, for food stamps and things like that. Some states already have programs in place that just basically increase the scrutiny on poor people with Medicaid.
Right. Like, so Seema Verma, who's in charge of CMS, she started a program in Indiana, which is Mike Pence's home state, where the idea was you had to pay for your Medicaid, and it was seen as innovative. But now what you're seeing is that people are filing lawsuits because they're getting kicked off of Medicaid. People are getting dinged for not paying. It turns out it's a bureaucratic error. There's something else going wrong. And I feel like those lawsuits, that's what we're going to see happening with this work requirement. People are going to get kicked off of Medicaid for whatever reason, and then they're going to say, listen, this violates my rights as a disabled person. I need to have access to this care. And that's where we need to be watching next.
Mary, one question at the heart of this is whether Medicaid is in fact a program that is plagued by non-productive people who don't deserve the benefits. I mean, that essentially seems to be the subtext of this policy, right? Which is taxpayers pay for health care for people who could be improving their lives but just won't do it.
That's right. And for these waivers to go through, they actually have a requirement that it must further the objectives of Medicaid. And until now, we haven't said that a work requirement or anything like it furthers the objectives of Medicaid. And that's important because when you look back at the history, Medicaid and Medicare were founded actually with the idea that they would be expanded, that we would be expanding this coverage to all Americans versus contracting it. And what we're seeing here is that we are contracting it. And I actually think even more toxic than just reducing the roles, which is one thing, is that what we're doing is we're calcifying this idea that there are some people who are moochers in the system, who are taking all of the goodies and, you know, they don't deserve it. And, you know, health policy experts push back on that and they say they don't exist. I'm not sure that they don't exist. I don't know that I would say that, actually. What I'd say instead is that in healthcare, we're all moochers. All of us, no matter where you get your health care, it is funded in some way by the government. I get my health care through my job. That is incentivized by the government. So I'm getting a benefit, but you're not dinging me for being a moocher. And all of us have these stories about times that we have worked the system to get what we need. For me personally, I know that I had cancer. I got a wig. I charged my insurance company $800 for a wig that I wore for 1 hour. Okay. Am I a moocher? Should I have been dinged for that? I don't know, but I know that we all do these things. And that's really the point. We're creating an underclass of people who are saying, you are moochers, you are bad, when really everyone does this in the system. And we need to be talking about that.
Mary Harris, managing editor at WNYC's Health Desk. Mary, thanks.
Thanks so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.